This is your gateway to the latest trends in the Gulf, bringing you exclusive insights and thought-provoking discussions. Welcome to AB Majlis, an Arabian business podcast. You can find our weekly episodes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And for more exclusive content, subscribe to us on arabianbusiness.com. Welcome back to another episode of the AB Majlis podcast. I'm Tala Michelle Issa, Chief Reporter at Arabian Business. Here with me today is a very special guest. He's a best-selling author, and he's actually, I'd like to call you the godfather of biohacking. So please welcome Dave Asprey. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
I'm happy to be here.
Oh, it's great that we got to catch you while you were in Dubai for a couple of days. So something I also forgot to mention to our audience was that you're also the founder of Upgrade Labs, Bulletproof Coffee, so many other ventures as well. But what struck me when I was reading up about you a few weeks ago was that you're 51, but your biological age is 31. Is that true? Because I Googled this.
You know, you shouldn't trust what you read on the internet. Wikipedia has my birthday wrong, okay. And you cannot fix Wikipedia. It's full of just completely wrong information. So I'm actually 53. I turned 53 a few days ago.
Okay.
There's that. And in my biological age, there are 20 different ways to measure biological age. And most of the time, people pick the one that is the youngest, of course. So my arterial flexibility age is 24, so I could say that. But I can say all of my numbers are below 40.
Okay.
So that's good.
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, you know, I've seen the work of, I guess, Brian Johnson. You know, he's on a vegan diet, and he's 47, but his biological age is 42, but his heart's age is 18. I mean, this is all really interesting.
And also, we have to be really clear. He says he's on a vegan diet, but he's not. He eats collagen protein from cows. I know because I made collagen into a billion-dollar industry. So he's semi-vegan, but not really.
Okay, interesting. Let's talk about your diet, actually. You know, you wrote the Bulletproof Diet.
Yeah.
You're on a low-carb, high-fat diet. Walk me through that a little bit.
Sure. I make sure that I get 1 gram of animal protein per pound of body weight for longevity. And that's actually something that works very, very well. So I focus on getting red meat because it's actually good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And grass-fed is better. And I eat carbs, and I eat moderate carbs, and I'm 6% body fat.
Mm-hmm.
If I was trying to lose more body fat, I would lower my carbs and do a cycle of ketosis, and then I would get even leaner, but I don't want to be any leaner.
Mm-hmm.
I also used to weigh 50% more than I do now. So I was obese, like 300 pounds obese.
Wow. Okay, and I mean, you changed that with your diet. I mean, is this how it all started?
It started partially with that. I also had chronic fatigue syndrome, same thing as long COVID today, in my 20s, and had arthritis and high risk of stroke and heart attack, and actually brain damage from toxic mold. So my health was a total disaster, but my career was taking off, and my brain just stopped working. And when the doctors couldn't do anything, they said, well, your labs are fine. Maybe you should try to lose weight. I'm like, oh, really? I worked out 90 minutes a day, 6 days a week for 18 months straight. I didn't lose any weight. And then they said, well, you must have been eating candy all the time. No, I was on a semi-vegetarian diet. I was low calories. Bottom line, it's working harder, doesn't get results.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in business, if you make it hard, you lose money. And if you make it efficient, you make money.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same for your health, the same for your exercise, and the same for your diet. So it's easy. You sit down, order a large piece of animal protein, and then eat that first. And then eat some veggies if you want to. Not all veggies are good for you in the same way. And then have some carbs if you want them. Mm-hmm. Rice or fruit are the best ones.
No, you know, but something you said in previous interviews really struck me, which was it's the quality of the vegetables that we eat today are very different. They don't really have the same nutritional value.
Yeah.
So there's something to do with the soil, right?
If you grow spinach in the same soil for 50 years, what makes you think your spinach will have iron? The reality is you have no idea what nutrients are in any food you eat, but they're lower than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out vegetables are a terrible way to get most minerals into the body because a lot of vegetables have compounds that prevent you from absorbing the vitamins and minerals that are in them. So humans, we can digest a lot of foods, which is great to stay alive during a famine. But just because you can eat it doesn't mean it's a free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the modern superfoods that no one would eat unless they were starving, like kale, they're not actually good for you. and to sort of fetishize them, it doesn't serve you. And it's really funny, kale is more expensive than eating steak on a per calorie basis. They charge a lot of money for a little bit of kale that has no energy in it, has lots of toxins, and it has a little bit of green stuff and some nutrients. But the toxins far outweigh the nutrients. So I look at food as, if I eat this, will I be full for 4 hours? Mm-hmm. And does it have good fats? Does it have good protein? And does it have minerals? And then other things like colored compounds. And it turns out vegetables suck at that.
That's not what my mom told me when I was 5.
Yeah, but who told her? But her grandmother would have said, okay, have some veggies, but they're not the center. Mm-hmm. The things that are most important are herbs and spices. So if you're looking to get polyphenols, these magical things that are good for you in plants, have some oregano, have some rosemary, have some sage, have some sumac. There's all sorts of these things. These have the power of plants to actually heal you and help you. But eating more broccoli isn't going to change your life.
Okay. This makes me really happy. This is the best thing I've heard all day. Yeah. So
steak first.
Yes. But you know, I was actually having a conversation with a friend the other day about bread. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves bread. Most people do. But there's something that's wrong with the bread today that, you know, our ancestors lived off that stuff for so long and didn't really complain about bloating or anything, as far as I know.
Yeah.
You know, what's, you know, what's the problem with that?
Man. Well, we used to have natural forms of wheat. And if you're getting American wheat, which is now getting exported to Europe, it's a different species that's harder to digest. And then in America, everything is soaked in glyphosate, which disrupts your microbiome. In the US, they also treat wheat with bromine, which stops your thyroid from functioning. Your thyroid's the energy thermostat for your body. And they also put folic acid in it, which is toxic for 1/3 of people. So they poison the grain before you even get it. And then we used to do sourdough. And when you allow bread to ferment for long periods of time, you reduce the toxic load. Because it turns out the brown part of the grain is full of toxins that are bad for us. And that's why we developed the ability to mill wheat, to take away the outer parts. Same thing with rice. We eat white rice because brown rice upsets your stomach and it has way more arsenic and other things. So part of food preparation is removing the toxic, less digestible parts. But if there's a famine or you're very, very poor, eat the brown bread, eat the brown rice because it has more energy even though there's toxins. Mm-hmm. But if you want to live a long time, reduce plant-based toxins, reduce man-made toxins, and then get the right nutrients into the body, and you get very different results.
Definitely. I mean, we're seeing more and more research every day that indicates that diet is probably one of the most important things to consider, right?
Diet and light and dark cycles and sleep. And it's really astounding to me that the things that we would serve to peasants, okay, these are the very poorest people who are working the fields. We give them the brown bread. We give them the brown rice and oatmeal because it's cheap. And then some food marketing executive, if we can convince people that oatmeal is a health food, even though it spikes your blood sugar more than ice cream, we can make them pay $8 for a bowl of peasant food. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of.
Marketing has created all this stuff. Like, I mean, I think at some point they were saying cereals are good for you as well.
Oh, yeah. Cereals are the worst thing ever.
Definitely.
Who's ever eaten a bowl of cereal and actually been full?
No one ever.
Yeah.
So if we move on to biohacking in general. So you wrote your first book over a decade ago. You know, you caught on to this. I don't want to say trend, but this entire ecosystem before it was even a thing.
I named it.
My name. You did. You are the founder of biohacking.
My name is in Webster's dictionary.
Yeah.
For biohacking.
Exactly.
Yeah, I came up with the name while I was walking around a remote part of Tibet, and I came back and I started sharing information about it, and I wrote the definition, and I made this industry, which is a $36 billion industry today, according to analysts.
Yeah, it is. But you know, what made you realize at the time that biohacking would become an industry? And did you ever think it would become such a big industry?
I did think it would become a big force in the world. Mm-hmm. I had run a longevity nonprofit in Palo Alto, California for a decade before I started the biohacking movement. I learned the things that became biohacking from people in their 70s and 80s who were reversing their age. Mm-hmm. Even 25 years ago, we were doing this. I used those techniques to fix my brain, to lose the weight, and to become healthy again, and then to become more than healthy. So I was already deeply entrenched in this, and I became the president of this nonprofit. Problem was, no one under 60 would ever come to our meetings. We're right next to Google's headquarters. And I realized there's a branding problem. If you're 20 years old, Mother Nature does not want you to think about longevity. You're supposed to be thinking about, how do I make my tribe? How do I make my mark in the world? How do I find a mate? And of course you want to be healthy, but it's number 25 on your to-do list and it's never at the top. Like, yeah. Unless you're really sick like I was, when you're 20 years old or 25 years old, when you wake up, you should not say, today I just want to be healthy. Mm-hmm. That's not your focus. But biohacking changed the language around health. So I actually want to be better. And whether you're 20 or you're 60, you want to be better. And biohacking is the tools to make it easy for you to improve whatever aspect of yourself you want.
Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. Yeah, because, you know, people, at least these days, we're dealing with information overload and chronic stress or high cortisol levels. There's mm-hmm. even a fertility problem now.
Huge one.
Low testosterone levels. I mean, when did everything go wrong? And for people who are dealing with these things, I'm going to ask you a little bit later about some advice as well.
When did it go wrong? Started sometime in the 1970s, maybe in the 60s. And a lot of people say, well, my grandmother ate all this processed food and margarine and she's just fine. Well, the problem is when we're unhealthy, we have unhealthy kids. And then we have more unhealthy kids. It's a multi-generational problem. And my first book was actually on fertility. It's called The Better Baby Book. And the subtitle would have been, How to Not Have a Kid with Autism. And so I studied fertility in great detail before I started the biohacking movement, because the mother of my children was a medical doctor who was infertile. Mm-hmm. So we used biohacking to have a kid at 39 and 42 with no IVF, just by fixing the environment around us and by improving diet, and what is now biohacking.
Yeah.
So the fertility problem drives me crazy because it's solvable. And people feel like there's just too many variables, I don't know what to do. And the cool thing is, today with AI, it's a lot easier to know what to do. I run a very high-end concierge longevity medical practice, and I'm not a doctor. I partner with a doctor, and our members come and spend 2.5 days getting $40,000 worth of lab work, and then we take them on these adventure trips where we're teaching them longevity and all of this. And we can use AI now to look at so much data to say, of all the many things in your life, this one genetic thing you have means that you can't process this or that. So we just make a few small changes, highly personalized. Mm-hmm. And then all the other dominoes fall and they get much healthier. So what this means is that for any normal person who's not going to be in a concierge practice like Unlimited Life, what you do is you can actually take whatever data you have and you can put it in AI. And that's part of what we're doing with Upgrade Labs, which is my longevity clinic where people can come and do all of the types of things that change how your body works. And we just get your data to see what's going to help you the most in the least amount of time. Mm-hmm. And the results there across, you know, dozens of clinics are really incredible. And most of the things, they're not medical interventions. They're just getting the right signal into your body to tell it what it needs to do and making sure you have the right nutrients present so that your body can change. Mm-hmm. One thing that a lot of people do, like, well, if working out is good, more working out is better. I certainly did that. But the data doesn't support that. Overtraining is a massive problem.
It is.
Right? And it's either under or overtrained. And if you're training really hard, you need really careful nutrients. Because if you do a curl and your body says, I needed zinc to build muscle, you have the zinc, you're not going to build the muscle. You'll just get stressed. So nutrient adequacy, having enough calories, having enough protein, having the right kinds of fat, you do that first and then you lift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that, again, all goes back to, I guess, fertility as well, right?
It does. Fertility is one of the first signs of health. Mm-hmm. If you're infertile, you're doing something very deeply wrong biologically. And that means that you need to figure out what it is. Is it a toxin? Is it a hormone problem? And the good news is, if you start getting your labs early, most fertility problems are easily solved. If you wait too long, it's harder to solve them. But it usually comes down to hormones and toxins. True. And those can be changed.
Mm-hmm. They've been using, these GLP-1 medicines, Ozempic, Mounjaro, yeah. Wegovy. either a lot of doctors are branding them, or maybe the media, I might be guilty of doing that, as a, you know, a fertility booster, because we saw the baby boom that came after Ozempic, you know, hit the mass market. Is that a sort of a short-term fix, or do you think it's actually a useful solution? Because a lot of it is obesity or lifestyle related, right?
If you're obese, you need to do whatever it takes to not be obese. And the problem is, most people who are heavy, we're willpower athletes. You work so hard. Every time there's a cookie, you say, I'm not going to eat the cookie. And you get in a willpower fight with the cookie. And sometimes the cookie wins, right? I'll just eat half. And then you feel guilty about it. This is all driven by your mitochondria in your body. This isn't really you. Your willpower comes from having energy. And when you're obese, your energy is going into fat, not into thinking. So fixing obesity matters. There's a lot of judgment around GLP-1 drugs, and it's absurd. They say, oh, there might be a side effect. You know what there's side effects to? Being fat.
Yes.
Like, being fat will kill you. It is so bad for you on every marker of aging and cancer risk and cardiovascular. So you got to solve it. And if I was obese, I would use GLP-1 drugs right now. But they do have side effects, and they're easy to fix. 2.2 grams of animal protein per pound of ideal body weight. Sorry, do that again. 2.2 grams per kilo of ideal body weight, even when you're on GLP-1s. You won't want to have that much protein. It doesn't matter. Just eat it. Mm-hmm. And then lift twice a week. If you do that on GLP-1s, the side effects mostly go away. And I interviewed the chief researcher of the first trial to use GLP-1 for weight loss. And this is before it became a big trend. And it's very clear, GLP-1 drugs are longevity drugs. Low doses of GLPs can absolutely make you live longer, less Alzheimer's, better cognitive function, better fertility. So they're one of the many peptides that can be beneficial. But if you fix your metabolism and you're in your fertile years, your fertility often returns.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Well, I've also been hearing a lot about people microdosing Ozempic or Mounjaro. I mean, is that if you're perfectly healthy or at a reasonable weight, not obese, should you be microdosing?
I recommend it. If you're on aggressive longevity plan, 100%. I recommend that for most of our unlimited life members. 10% of the dose you would use for weight loss. Mm-hmm. And it's just enough to tip your metabolism towards younger, higher functioning.
Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. But if there was, you know, if someone, let's say someone's in their mid-20s, early 30s, within that bracket, if you could start with one biohack for them, what would it be and why?
We like to think that food is where we get our nutrients, right? Start looking at light and dark as necessary nutrients for you as well. If you were to black out your bedroom, and it's hard here in Dubai, and the city glows all night long, so invest in better curtains and tape over any little blinky lights you have in your bedroom. And there's a study that shows the amount of light that comes around curtains is enough to increase depression by 69%.
Really?
Yeah. So our bodies require darkness so that our cells get the signal in order to recover and recuperate. So if you're just getting a little bit of light in your bedroom, your body won't recover.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm afraid of the dark.
Yeah. Blackout curtains would be a good thing. And then in the morning, go outside for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Take off your sunglasses. And if you just do that, it doesn't cost you anything. But man, the difference in your alertness, your motivation, and just how you feel, how happy you are, it's profound. And because you're getting better sleep, your testosterone levels are higher. And this is true for men and women. And it's funny because people say, oh, testosterone is, you know, the man hormone. Women have 4 times more testosterone than estrogen. Women need testosterone as much as men. We just need different doses. Mm-hmm. So it's incredible what happens just with sun and dark. And if you do those, and then you follow the food advice, which is get enough animal protein, right? And don't go crazy on the sugar. You might be really surprised at the changes in your quality of life.
Interesting, interesting. And, you know, let's talk minerals, supplements, all that stuff. What's probably the most underrated supplement?
The most underrated supplement is called vitamin DAKE. It's D-A-K-E. This is a mix of fat-soluble supplements. They're necessary because they direct minerals to tell them where to go in the body. And then taking a broad spectrum mineral blend is really important. You just can't count on your food to give you what your body needs anymore. because the food is not as good as it was. And the stress on our bodies from our environment, from chemicals, and even from social media, it's much higher than we evolved to. So it's kind of crazy to say, oh, I'm going to get all my nutrients from my food. Well, then you should also get all of your stress from Mother Nature. So
true. It doesn't really add up.
No, you've got to build a resilient body that can more than handle anything that's in our modern world. And that requires supplements. So for me, it's vitamin D, Minerals 101 are the two primary ones.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And, you know, I guess hydration is also important. I don't know, people are drinking more electrolytes these days. Is that important? You know, electrolytes, salt, all that stuff.
Well, we've all heard 8 glasses of water a day, right?
Yes.
You know where that came from?
No.
Evian.
Really? Marketing again.
Has anyone ever told you how big the glasses are?
No.
Has anyone ever said that if it's hot outside or if you're bigger or smaller, that that might be the wrong dose? 8 glasses of water a day is the stupidest thing ever, except maybe 10,000 steps a day, which was also made up by a marketing company, but that was in the 1950s. So drinking more water can dehydrate you. And people say, but that's not possible. And especially in the U.S., you see people with these giant Stanley cups, and they're drinking water all day, and they're dehydrated. And I know, because if you come into an Upgrade Labs location, put you on a $26,000 medical grade sensor, and I can measure the hydration of your cells. And those are the people who have dehydration, because our cells are full of salt water, like the ocean. So if you drink a bunch of water with no salt in it, it cannot get into the cells, because then the cells would lose their salt. And if you don't have any salt, you can't carry electricity in your body. So the war on salt is stupid. The guy who did the most research ever, the former president of the American Hypertension Society, after studying 3,000 people for 3 years, measuring salt in their urine every single day, his summary is, if you want to live longer, eat more salt. So, yes.
Blood pressure.
Increasing sodium intake raises your blood pressure within the error margin of a blood pressure cuff.
Okay.
So.
In layman terms.
In layman's terms. What that means is it may increase your blood pressure, but it's such a tiny amount that it's when you take your blood pressure with a cuff, it might be off by 2 or 3. Salt can change the number by 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. So salt doesn't matter. But deficiency of other minerals like potassium and magnesium is important. So I don't drink water on a regular basis without extra at least sea salt or ideally electrolytes. If you do that, you drink less water, and you're way more hydrated. And I can measure the difference. We measure 4,000 data points to get this. Drinking salt water makes you more powerful. It makes your brain work better. And there's studies that support this.
Interesting. You know, I'd be curious to hear from you, like what's, you know, from all the information that's being put out there, what's actually a fad and what's true. But before I get into that, something very controversial probably for many people, which is nicotine. What's your take on nicotine?
Well, smoking is provably really bad for you. Vaping is worse for you. So most of us then hear nicotine is bad. But smoking and vaping are not nicotine. There are thousands of other chemicals and nicotine. In 1986, a professor at Vanderbilt University wrote the first paper showing that low doses of extracted pharmaceutical nicotine reverse Alzheimer's disease.
Nicotine reverses Alzheimer's
disease. Nicotine is neuroprotective. It is one of the most studied and most effective smart drugs out there. It increases alertness, cognitive function, and it's neuroprotective. So using up to 5 milligrams of nicotine a day for longevity purposes is a really good idea. And I've written about that in my New York Times bestselling longevity book. Since that time, you've seen guys like Andrew Huberman come out and many others saying, it's really interesting. You can do stuff with nicotine. You can. So I've never smoked other than a few cigars here and there for fun. And I absolutely use nicotine. And I use it on a daily basis. And it has improved my quality of life dramatically. And it does for many, many people. However, the little snooze things can be full of microplastics.
My next question.
So I usually use either a spray or a lozenge that sits. In fact, I have one right here, right now.
Hey, interesting.
I'm doing, this is a 6 milligram. Dose because I'm doing a podcast.
Interesting. Oh, you seem very focused. You have a lot of information in your mind. Like, how does he remember all of this?
I also take smart drugs. So there you go.
Okay, fair. So also creatine, we're hearing about this all the time. Obviously, people in the bodybuilding world know about this, but we're seeing reports suggest that women over the age of 40 can really benefit from this, people in general. We know it's very useful for bodybuilding, but beyond that.
Mm. It turns out bodybuilders are some of the best biohackers ever. When I started this movement of biohacking, like, what would happen if we brought neuroscientists, longevity doctors, and bodybuilders into the same room to swap notes, right? And wow, magic happens. So creatine is one of those examples. Creatine makes your body make more ATP. So I would say women under 40 need creatine just as much as women over 40. Women use more creatine and they make less than men do. And unless you're eating a lot of meat, like red meat, the way I do, you're not getting creatine anyway. So you get maybe 3 grams of creatine if you eat a lot of steak. But the dose that really affects your brain, especially if you didn't get good sleep or you're jet lagged, it's closer to 10 to 20 grams.
Per day.
Per day. And anyone listening to this, go get some creatine, try that, and just watch what the quality of your day is. It's like, what happened? My brain is on fire in a good way. I can think, I can focus, I feel so much better. So creatine's a longevity molecule. It's very, very important, and I take it every day.
Okay, I take it every day too, so I'm glad to hear that. So my next question is, what's actually a fad in this whole biohacking space? Something that really frustrates you as the man who actually gave birth to this industry.
The vegan diet.
The vegan diet.
The vegan diet does more harm than you could possibly imagine. Because, I mean, I was a devout vegan for a couple of years. I shattered 3 teeth and gave myself autoimmune conditions and eventually realized it was really not good for me. And every longevity doctor I work with says the same thing. Vegans are the worst patients. Every sports trainer, same thing. Vegans, they have no endurance. And everyone who knows vegans knows that they get mad all the time for no reason. You laughed because it was true.
I did laugh.
Okay. Now, I say this as a vegan. My emotional regularity wasn't very good then. And it's because you're starving. So that diet has no basis in science, and it needs to be destroyed. You can be vegetarian if you want. There's ways to do that. But there is no society that's been vegan for multiple generations because it destroys fertility. So if you're 25 and say, I'm going to go on a vegan diet because I like puppies or some weird thing, you are taking your biological reserves and you are just pissing them away. And it's not okay. You are making yourself weak. You're making yourself less fertile. You're decreasing your bone density. And you're not doing yourself any favor. And you're killing more animals than eating grass-fed meat. This is something that we don't really think about in the vegan diet, but if you're eating soy, there's a big tractor that comes through and just chops up everything, including baby deer and bunnies and butterflies and frogs and salamanders and all the other cute ones, plus all the worms and things that aren't cute. So we're sterilizing the land to make tofu burgers. And humans deserve better, our soil deserves better, and our animals deserve better. So deaths per calorie is a thing. And if you do that, you eat regenerative meat as a primary part of your body plus some vegetables. And then just from a health perspective, the vegan diet doesn't work. I did it for a health perspective, but it doesn't matter if you're looking for environment, looking for animals, or looking for humans. It's just wrong on every level. So don't be vegan and you'll live longer and be happier and you'll be nicer to other people.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. But what else? Is there maybe a process, I don't know, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, all this stuff.
I would say endurance cardio is also a health fad. It started in the 1970s with someone who, as far as I can tell, had mental illness. He just had to run. I don't know who he's running away from. And we say, I'll run a marathon in order to be healthy. Do you know what happened to the first guy who ran a marathon?
No.
He died. That's why they run a marathon, to celebrate him running himself to death, to tell them that the Spartans were coming. Like, it's ridiculous. So I support doing a marathon once to prove you can do it, but it is not a health practice. And long distance runners and endurance cardio people, they have cardiac aging and they're basically wearing themselves out. They do not age well at all. So we used to do that because we thought it would be good. Using the AI technologies, it's called the AI bike at Upgrade Labs. If you do 15 minutes per week of cardio with no sweating, I can improve your cardiorespiratory fitness by 12%. That's equal to 2 additional years of life on scales. If you do an hour a day of spin class 5 days a week, you'll improve by 2%. So 15 minutes of AI-powered cardio equals 6 times more results than spending an hour a day on cardio.
And in those 15 minutes, is it high intensity, or is it just?
We
said no sweating, right?
It's mostly low intensity, but we're measuring your heart rate. You have a computer talking to you. No, go slower. And then when it says go fast, it's really hard to go fast. You have two 20-second sprints, and that's it. And if you do more than that, you get worse results.
Mm-hmm. Got to try that. And I've been reading up a lot on saunas and cold plunges and all that stuff. I mean, how effective are they really in reversing your biological age?
I don't think we can say that sauna is going to reverse your biological age in a meaningful way all by itself. But it does reduce all-cause mortality dramatically, which extends your likely lifespan. But will it make you younger? In some people, especially if it drops toxins, then it would. And alternating cold plunge and then doing sauna, then cold plunge, the way they do in Norway or Sweden, that does raise growth hormone dramatically. And that might reverse your biological age. Mm-hmm. So there's a role for both of them. Problem is, people tend to overdo things. So what's cold therapy look like? It's up to 3 minutes in cryotherapy or in a cold plunge. But you don't need more. And you don't even need it every day. And it's rough on women. So women might need only 90 seconds or a slightly warmer tub. So being in there for 10 minutes to prove how tough you are doesn't provide any benefits.
Mm-hmm. It's great for Instagram, though.
Yeah, it is. I gave myself hypothermia once. I was doing an IG live from a cold plunge with ice floating in it, and I got into a good conversation. And 15 minutes later, I got out. Like, I'm kind of cold, but I feel great. And by the time I got back to my hotel room, I was trying to drink coffee to stay warm, and I was shivering so hard, I was like spilling coffee on my face. And so, that was not fun. Don't overdo it.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned growth hormone. So a lot of people I know here, at least, and this is highly illegal in the UAE, but bodybuilders do inject growth hormone. What does that do for biological aging?
If you're low on growth hormone, it'll extend your life and it'll reduce your biological age. If you're already high on it, it can give you extra large organs. That's not good for you. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the circumstance. But generally, it can be good for you. Mm-hmm. The modern take on that is to use peptides. There's them called ipamorelin and CJC. And these will naturally cause your body to make more growth hormone.
Okay, that sounds healthier.
It is.
All right, so I wanted to bring it back to the UAE and Saudi. So the UAE and Saudi Arabia, they're investing heavily in the longevity space.
Yeah.
At least in Dubai specifically, I could tell you, I've observed there's 10 times more clinics now here just for biohacking, including Aeon Clinic and a few others. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing here in the region that you aren't seeing anywhere else?
One of the reasons that longevity is so hot in UAE is that the government is welcoming of it. So the regulations allow these sorts of things. And that's why I'm bringing Upgrade Labs here, which is powered by AI. One thing that concerns me is, it's very easy to buy a red light panel and a magnet thing and say, it's a biohacking clinic. But how do you know if a certain person on a certain day, what do they need? Right. So what we do at Upgrade Labs is we're getting 187 million data points per client per year. And then we're putting that into the AI engine. We measure how you're doing today. And then we tell you what to do in the right order with the right settings in order to meet your goals. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like if you have a kitchen, it doesn't mean you know how to cook. So Upgrade Labs is here to bring all that data and AI to make sure that you do it right.
Interesting stuff. But why Dubai?
I've been coming to Dubai for about 10 years now. And Dubai has the regulatory environment and the interest from the people. And it's also such a just a forward-looking city, a city of the future kind of a thing. So there's a feeling here where people are saying, I'm interested in this. I'm willing to invest in it because I care about myself. So there's places in the world where health is just not important, but here it is important. And because of the future focus, biohacking is the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think Even not so long ago, especially the Gulf region, we had like very high obesity rates, diabetes, blood pressure issues. And I think what a lot of, at least my friends in Europe say, is that, you know, people in Dubai, you're not living organically. You're always so stressed. You live to work. You don't work to live. I hear this a lot. Do you think that plays a role in probably why there's suddenly this increase in biohacking clinics?
I think there might be a little bit of judginess there. I don't know any European who isn't terribly stressed. Have you seen the situation in Europe lately?
Yeah, I have. That's what I mean. It's like I keep hearing the same thing over and over again every year.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering.
So Dubai would be the safest city in the world, which creates a different feeling than getting stabbed in London. For real. Like there's physical safety in Dubai that's remarkable. No one in Europe is living with nature unless they're living in a forest or a cave.
True.
They're all in these, you know, climate-controlled buildings. But there's actually a lack of energy infrastructure in Europe. So it's funny, more Europeans die of lack of air conditioning every year.
Every summer.
Yeah, than almost anything else. And it's kind of ridiculous. And they come from a European heritage, but to say, well, they're not natural enough, but nothing in Europe is natural either. Nothing in the US is natural. We don't live in nature, we live in homes. So biohacking, the definition is change the environment around you and inside you so you have control of your state. That means you replicate nature if you're not in nature. Most people in major cities, I don't care if it's Europe or the US or anywhere, there's no nature. You can go outside and get sunshine, except maybe in like Shanghai where it's too polluted, the sun doesn't come in through that.
True.
Right? But what are you gonna do, right? So you could say, it's their fault because they're not natural, but I'm not natural too. That doesn't make any sense. So what you do is you set up your home so that the lighting in the morning tells your body it's morning, and so that the air is clean like it would have been in the forest. You can add essential oils like you would get in the forest, right? So let's make comfortable environments that create human thriving. And because Dubai and UAE, it's really hot. So we actually have more control of our internal environments here. So why don't we just make them healthy? Mm-hmm. So I'm in discussions with multiple builders and hotel chains about how do we make environments that create humans who feel good all the time, so it doesn't take any effort to be healthy. Mm-hmm. And people don't recognize at least half your stress comes from your body being stressed because you don't have nutrients, because you have toxins, because your circadian rhythm is disrupted, because you're eating a bunch of canola oil. So the body's stressed, and then your mind processes that as some kind of stress, and then you blame your mother-in-law. But it's coming from your body. It's not coming from your thoughts. And then some stress comes from your thoughts as well and from doom scrolling on social media and all that. But the biological stress feels like emotional stress. So you can make your home healthier. You make your workplace healthier. And in a place like Dubai, you can make the entire city healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing that a lot, I think. I've heard of quite a few real estate developers, really vouching for regenerative real estate. So yeah, I think the next few years should be pretty interesting here. All right, so for the final segment, I wanted to do a rapid fire round with you. So
okay, let's do it.
Quick question and answer before we wrap up. So what's one supplement you would keep if the rest disappeared? I know you take many.
I take 150 supplements a day. So just one. It would probably be either vitamin D or magnesium.
Or just regular magnesium, not magnesium glycinate? Or
there's a bunch of different forms. So magnesium glycinate is the easiest to absorb form of all of them, but I would take what I could get.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. What's one wellness trend you would ban tomorrow?
The vegan diet.
I knew it. All right. The cheapest biohack with the biggest return on investment.
It's darkness at night.
Mm-hmm. Sauna or cold plunge for the rest of your life?
If I had to choose one, it would be sauna. Mm-hmm.
And what's one habit that actually changed your brain?
Telling the truth. And that one maybe requires a little bit more.
Yeah, please.
There's a study about this. And micro lies create stress in your body. And you can actually measure the stress with something called GSR. So if you go through every single thing you say and you make it 100% true, doesn't mean you have to tell everyone everything. It just means that what you say is true. For instance, if you said, Dave, could you pick me up at the airport? If I said, I can't make it, that's a lie. I could pick you up. I'm not going to cancel my meeting, right? So just being truthful, say, I'm not going to pick you up at the airport because I have something to do. That relaxes the body, and lying and saying, I can't make it, creates an internal stressor. So in my language, whether I'm writing, whether I'm speaking, I do my very best to only say truthful statements, which means I don't spend any energy tracking whatever kind of BS, whatever kind of lies I might have told that makes someone's feelings happy or whatever. I don't do that with my kids. I don't do it with anyone.
That's a really good habit, actually.
Yeah.
And what's a biohack that you regret trying?
I want to say the vegan diet, but I feel like I'm beating a dead horse. Well, a dead tofu horse. I'm always interested in figuring out the extremes. So recently, I thought, well, saunas take too long. So I'm just going to make my hot tub really hot. So I modified the software to make it hotter than the safety sensors would do, like Japanese hot tubs are. And then I did a bunch of hot-cold cycles for a couple months. And it was probably not good for me, because it turns out that cooking your balls, can I say that on here? Testes?
Yeah, your testes.
That cooking those is not a good idea. So my testosterone levels went down from doing that.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Oh, so that's not a myth then?
No, that's not a myth. In fact, when I'm in the sauna, I use an ice pack on those because you just don't want to overheat those. You need that testosterone.
Yeah, true. All right. And what's one thing every Gulf resident should start doing today?
There's so much abundance here. But going outside, even if it's hot, I just like 5 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the morning, and take off your sunglasses. Everyone wears sunglasses outside, sometimes inside.
Even inside.
I wear sunglasses inside because the lights in here are not so good. But when you're outside, just that brief bit of sun, you don't have to look at the sun, you just have to see the sun reflected off things. Mm-hmm. It reduces your need to wear glasses and it resets your timing for the entire day. So even if it's hot, 5 minutes, go outside, like drink some tea in the morning, and you'll be fine. And it's so simple, it's so easy, and you have beautiful sunshine here.
Mm-hmm. And it's free.
Yeah.
All right, last one. What time do you wake up and why?
I usually wake up around sunrise because I finally fixed my circadian rhythm. So I do that naturally.
Naturally.
Most of my life, I would go to bed at 2 a.m. and I just couldn't fall asleep before that. And I would wake up much later. But when I learned about dimming the lights at night, getting red bulbs, or when I'm traveling, I wear the true dark glasses that are designed for sleep. And I just go to bed at 10:30 and I wake up naturally.
Wow. Interesting stuff. Right. I love the work you're doing and so glad you're able to join us. So thank you for coming.
My pleasure. And thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. And thank you to all our subscribers. Sign up to arabianbusiness.com for all exclusive content.